going on down there?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Transformers WTF on TFW Prime Time! I am Vangelis here to hostify for you, and with me today is Dog Dog.
Hey, everybody!
Throat. And also here today with us is Omegas Prime.
Sitting alone with nothing reading Dark of the Moon anywhere.
Yeah, yep. I am not in that position. I can guarantee you. Also, what I can guarantee you we will not be experiencing today is any kind of Aaron Smith, because he cannot get on Skype, and it's his birthday tomorrow. But he's still all over Twitter talking mess on Leader Sentinel Prime. So,
I didn't get to take off for my birthday.
I don't know what he's thinking. We're going to have to ask him about this on Thursday for 148. But that aside, we are here to talk to you today, not about the Dark of the Moon toy I'm playing with right now, but Transformers Prime Shadow Zone, which, in light of our discussion about the trailer for the episode, I was worried, like, oh man, discussing the trailer, am I just going to know what's going to happen? Everything I thought from the trailer, I was completely wrong about. Every single thing. And I was also completely wrong about Skyquake, so I enjoyed this episode, because this episode kind of went like, hey, guess what? Every time you think you're predicting something, you're wrong! And I like it when I get that experience with a show. So, I got a whole grab bag of things I could pick out to talk about, so I just want to start off with a real short one, I'm guessing. But just, we have confirmation, Skyquake actually was dead. So, I was wrong. I forgot, I didn't go back to listen to our discussion from that episode, but did either of you guys think Skyquake was alive, or was I the only one? I can't remember anymore.
I think you were the only one.
Oh.
I mean, I thought that it would be cool if he was. I didn't think that he would be alive because of everybody's reactions.
Yeah.
I figured they'd give us a little better hint than something other than the eyes fading out a certain way. That's a pretty, a lot to ask for someone to pick up on, I think.
Pretty finite the way they finish them off. I didn't expect them to come back at all.
Yeah, I was proven wrong there. I don't think my theory was super ludicrous, but hey, that's what happens. But guess what? Skyquake was up and about anyway. So let's talk about Skyquake or Zombiequake. I'm trying to recall, and I know this is pretty poor of me as a fan. I think in the comic books, in the Marvel comic books, Skyquake was a bit of a zombie at some point due to the Matrix. Am I misremembering things, or did that actually happen?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I'm not up on the comics.
I'm going to look it up while we're talking. But did you guys have any thoughts on Zombie Skyquake? Gog Dog.
I thought it was clever how they brought him back, but how he was in the middle of the whole thing and got stuck with the kids. You know, nothing mind-blowing, but it was clever to have them, instead of being stuck with an enemy that's intelligent, like a Decepticon, it's just, they're basically kind of trapped in this, it's almost like the IDW Beast Wars comics, like they're in the same world, but slightly out of phase, and no one else, they can see them, but no one else can see them back.
Yeah.
But I thought that was rather clever of them. It wasn't even, at least at first, they weren't even really being stalked. It was just this, it was almost like Shadow of the Colossus, where there's just big, hulking, somewhat mindless beast just kind of walking around, and they're like, oh, wait, we got to go that way. All right, let's just run between his legs. He won't see us. And it wasn't until later on where he actually started taking note. But yeah, I was... I'm not sure what I expected. I guess because the solicitation had said that they were stuck in an alternate dimension with a reanimated Skyquake. And I guess I was kind of hoping that the quote unquote alternate dimension aspect would be an excuse to bring him back, because my whole thing was, I don't think it's a bad story element that Skyquake died. I just think it sucks that they took the time to make that character model and tease us like we're getting a new character and then kill him off. And I was like, well, they they got to bring him back somehow. And I think that was just my own hope, was the whole alternate dimension thing. Like, okay, well, somehow they find themselves in an alternate dimension. That's a perfect way to bring in a dead character back. But it wasn't really even so much of an alternate dimension. It was more of just like a phase shift or whatever. But
yeah, you're talking about a temporal problem, not a dimensional problem.
Yeah. And we can get more into that later. But the with all that aside, Zombie Skyquake was pretty hilarious. And I'm kind of glad that he didn't get killed again at the end. He's still kind of in this phase shift walking around. And
so, somewhere.
I really hope, even if it's in another season down the line, that he somehow gets brought back in for humor purposes.
I like him just as his looming threat. Somewhere in another dimension, there is an armless Zombie Skyquake just wandering around looking for something to kill.
Yeah, and go ahead.
He's a little bit smarter than your average zombie, though, at least enough to know he's missing a limb, and this thing on the ground that's arm-shaped might be mine. No, not quite. Throw it away.
Yeah, that's how it was almost played a little bit, as you said, for laughs a little bit more, in that he was a little bit less dumb just for the sake of, you know, some zombie antics.
Yeah, but to be fair, the only Dark Energon zombies we've seen before were under the full influence of the symbiosis.
Yeah.
So this is kind of the first time we've seen one outside of that, I believe. With the exception of maybe Cliffjumper, but he wasn't really around that much, and he was only waist up. So,
and to clear up some confusion I caused before, and I'm going to leave this in just so you can all laugh at me. I don't know why, but when I thought Zombie and Jet, I mixed up G1 Skyquake with G1 Thunderwing. That's where I was having my misunderstanding. I don't know why. For some reason, he really made me think Thunderwing this episode. And I was thinking of comic book Thunderwing as the Matrix zombie.
But I mean, that's an easy mistake to make. He's kind of, I mean, maybe not personality-wise, but he's giant-ass Jet.
Yeah, so. I got the names mixed up there. That's what was up. Omegas, how'd you feel about Zombie Skyquake?
Similar to Gog, I quite enjoyed seeing this more. It is more played for laughs, sure. It was really unexpected. Like, I'm the same with him. It's the solicitation that just got me thinking, oh, alternate dimension, Skyquake. You know, just more or less wondering, okay, it's an alternate dimension. He's going to be a little different. I wonder how different. This was really different.
Yeah.
And that's not what I was calling for.
That was, once again, the episode completely telling me I'm wrong in every single way, right down to what alternate dimension means. It's like, no, not parallel alternate dimension full of evil Autobots and good Decepticons kind of alternate dimension. It's just, no, it's the fourth dimension. It's the same thing. It's just their dimension shifted. Like, they used alternate dimension in a way I wasn't expecting them to use it in. And
yeah, a lot of that comes from just how they worded the preview, because the preview doesn't lie at all. It's just worded very carefully.
And that's why I was like, you know what? I like that preview now, because that preview had me thinking it was going to be Dark Energon Zombie Starscream, pretty much. Some kind of alternate dimension Skyquake and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, no, it's actually completely different. And I kind of like that. Before I go off the rails too much, though, Gog, did you have something you'd like to bring up in the episode?
Let's, I guess, jump right into Starscream. He didn't exactly have the effect he was looking for when he plunged that shard of Dark Energon in his chest.
Nope.
When he did that, he let out this little epic monologue of, you know, now you were superior, but now I have the upper hand, or whatever he said. And I was like, oh, snap. Like, we got two Dark Energon infused dudes right now. Like, that's crazy. And didn't do anything. He just pulls it out. Like, oh, well. Like, nothing happened. I was like, huh? That's not supposed to happen. Like, with Megatron, it, like, fused into his spark and, like, looked like it melted, had, like, a minor meltdown in his spark chamber, and everything was all crazy looking, and Starscream just, like, pulls it back out, like, hunk of junk, this didn't work, and goes on about his day. It's like, what is going on here? Like,
This really opened up what the science kind of is behind how that stuff works, and that it looks like, you know, there's different interpretations you could take. Like, was because Starscream had the shard Megatron had used, so was that shard kind of spent? of some of its energy or something? Or does this show that at any time Megatron could have just pulled that thing out of himself and been fine before the space bridge explosion?
Like, it almost worked. It almost looked like it worked for a little while because he had this like Super Saiyan level power up as soon as he plunged it in. But the second he started getting shot at, it's nothing happens.
Yeah, they blew his arm off. And
yeah, well, I mean, when Megatron did that, he was just people were just shooting him and it was bouncing off. If I remember correctly, right?
I think so. Yeah.
I mean, maybe I'm misremembering something, but
we can check the tape later.
Yeah, but I just remember him being like crazy powerful, and then with Starscream it's like they shot at him, and I almost wonder if it was a bit of a movie reference there, because when he got shot his arm got blown off and he grabs it and runs.
Yeah.
Like kind of like in Revenge of the Fallen when he was walking around holding his own arm. But
well, there was a definite movie reference in this episode. I don't know if you guys caught it or not.
Yep.
Which one?
I recall.
One of the weapon upgrade arms offered to him was literally movie Starscream's weaponized missile arm.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And before that, he basically offered him a null ray and like talked it up, and Starscream's like, I don't want that junk.
I liked how Starscream got all defensive. He's like, I just want the one I had before. And the Knockout's all like, well, look, that's kind of outdated, and I don't really have any more of those.
Yeah. I think this episode would have been great on its own, but the fact that the kids and Skyquake got pulled into the alternate dimension, but so did Starscream's arm. It was just a random bit of like, well, what else can we throw in there?
Yeah.
And it ended up playing out nicely. So I thought it was funny.
Go ahead.
No, well, I was just going to say too, the way the kids ended up using Starscream's arm as a weapon.
Again, more world building. Yeah. Like Raph's like, well, I see him do a thing with his finger. So you yank on the fingers and it fires the missile. I was like, sweet!
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a little Spider-Man trick. Like, I'll move my fingers in a certain way.
It just seems a little unsafe. You know, like going to grip a doorknob or something ends up blowing a hole through the wall.
But at the same time, I was like, I like that they went even farther in my favorite word when I say this stuff, like legitimizing how some of that stuff works. It's like, well, he's got little sub switches in his limbs, so even if he cocks his arm the right way, he fires his missile.
Yeah, yeah. I do. Go ahead.
I was gonna say, has Starscream fired the missile in robot mode before? Because I think he shot it before in jet mode, but I don't remember if he's actually shot it off in robot mode.
I want to say he has, but I would not be able to quote for you the time it happened because I don't have the episodes quite so memorized.
But if he is, I'm totally going to hold the writers accountable and see if he has the little finger thing there.
Well, any listeners, I mean, we have listeners who are, you know, friggin' getting encyclopedic about the show already, which is fantastic. And if any of you out there can answer that question for us, you know, does it hold up? Is it legitimate that he cocks his fingers to fire the missile in robot mode? Let us know in the thread.
Mm-hmm. I do prefer that method rather than I was really expecting Raph's super hacking to come back here where he's hacking into Starscream's arm. Ooh, I found missilefire.exe.
No, don't worry, guys. I can hear how it works. He starts saying beeps. I was like, biddy-doo, biddy-doo, boop. And then it fires the missile. I don't know. I'm happier with how they did it. Omegas, do you have any other thoughts on Starscream in this episode?
Something I was going to bring up later. I love the dialogue he was having with Knockout through this whole episode.
Oh, very good banter, yes.
Oh, yeah. Just imagine my surprise when I'm walking around and my arm falls off.
Yeah, and it's like, well, do you have it? He's like, no, no, it was beyond repair. Never mind, I'm going to go find it.
Yeah, that part was great. Yes, doctor, I'm fine.
I loved how they were also making it clearer that Knockout was kind of like their medic as long as he's there.
Mm-hmm.
Before I tangent off that, though, I wanted to throw in one more thing about Starscream. I tweeted about it when I watched the episode to a degree, but Steve Bloom, he is owning that role hardcore. This episode just solidified it even further. He was rocking Starscream as a role. I was really enjoying him.
Yeah, I agree. His just utter disgust when he came off of that table was just, it felt like Starscream was just pissed. And in a position where he couldn't do anything other than walk around their former leader, basically, since Megatron had been shot down months ago or whatever. And now he's just walking around like a crony again and having to face everyone. And not only face everyone, but did you see his face? It was scratched to all hell, including the rest of his body. Yeah. Starscream was in bad shape.
That answered the question that we had from last week of you know, what was he going to do to Starscream? It's pretty clear. He was going to beat the crap out of him.
Yeah, and I think if we just would have gotten a hint of that at the end of the last episode, like, the ending of that would have felt much better to me. But, I definitely think that the intro to this episode was a lot stronger than the ending to the last. But, yeah, I mean, regardless, I like Megatron, because he didn't just kill Starscream and throw him away and go on out of business. He just tortured and beat the crap out of him, stuck him on the operating bed, and he's like, "You're not dead yet. Report for duty in the morning."
Yeah.
It's like, yes. Oh, it's great. And, oh, yeah, Starscream just looked, he looked rough, and he just looked, oh, he just looked so pissed. It's going to be interesting to see where this goes now.
And again, it was kind of like how the show made a bit of a quote-unquote realistic way of showing why Starscream became the sort of treacherous, I'm going to kill Megatron and take over kind of character. This felt like, again, a much more realistic depiction of why does Megatron keep Starscream around? And in this case, it's like, well, Starscream is effective. Megatron doesn't want to lose a good soldier, but it's not like he just keeps him around. He beats the crap out of him and then puts him on an operating table and tells the medics, fix him so he works. You know, and make sure everyone knows, like, yeah, Starscream does what I tell him, because when he doesn't, I beat him to an inch of his life, and then I have medics patch him up, and it feels a lot more like I can take it seriously that Megatron keeps him around, because he has clearly shamed him as much as possible to put him in his place. Omegas, did you have a point you'd like to bring up from the episode?
You'd think by now someone would learn to keep a leash on Miko.
I was a little bit feeling like, oh, there's Miko again, doing her thing. Wanted to go check out dead robots coming back to life.
We haven't really gotten that side of Miko lately. She's been very subdued in the background in some of these episodes. Then back in full force this time.
Well, to clarify, subdued for Miko.
Subdued for Miko, okay. Yeah. Little asterisk there.
Like, if we're going to say subdued, I would say, like, well, no, Raph. Raph is Mr. Subdued in the background, because he's not doing anything in the background. I wonder if this episode, given how the show has been keeping such a good hand on character development, if this is going to kind of also signify her being a bit less eager to run out into the middle of a fight. Because, you know, at the end, she's kind of like, yeah, I've got the image of zombie robots burned into my brain. I think I'm good for a little while.
That's the one thing I worry about, is falling into the Saturday morning afternoon or the Saturday morning cartoon trap of, well, we've learned this valuable lesson, and next week, what lesson? Well, I'll run into danger again.
Yes, that's what I mean, is Prime seems to have avoided that so far. Something that even struck animated, I recall we talked about with animated Bumblebee being the culprit of it. So I guess this might be a test for Prime to see if, you know, is Transformers Prime going to escape that thing entirely and have Miko not want to go and check out zombie robots come the next time they show up.
Yeah. To be fair, at least this time it was, because, like, my main gripe of her in the beginning was like, oh, I want to go see these guys kill each other. And it was like, they just lost somebody. And, like, she's shouting at them like, yeah, let's go see more. And it's like, oh, Miko, like, anybody would know. But at least this time it was, oh, let's go see Night of the Living Zombie Robot or whatever she said. I can't remember exactly, but it was a Night of the Living Dead reference. And she's like, yeah, let's go see that. So at least then she was like, yeah, I want to go see my friends take out a bunch of cannon fodder. So it was I didn't have as much of a problem with that, but it's like, yeah, it's probably not a good idea to run through a ground bridge without anyone knowing, because then what if they leave you? You don't even know where you are.
And then when you drop your phone, the worst case scenario happens, because there's no way of contacting you.
If she hadn't done that, we wouldn't have had this episode. So I guess you can't really complain too much.
Exactly.
It came in handy. And who knew Bulkhead had such delicate fingers?
Yeah, I was proud of him.
I can break a cell phone by looking at it the wrong way. I don't know how he managed to pick that thing up and check out texts on and everything.
He's not your regular Bulkhead. He's got a little bit of that finesse to him, I guess. I say finesse, again, for Bulkhead.
For Bulkhead.
Actually, just going off that was a point I wanted to bring up in part because someone name dropped me in the discussion thread for this, saying they hope that this comes up on this recording. So I will say there's a theory going around. I think it stems from either the toy or the M board on 4chan of why RC didn't notice them running through the ground bridge. And the current theory is apparently her pupils are incredibly dilated in that shot. So people are kind of crowding on the theory that she is completely stoned out of her mind. And that's why she doesn't hear Miko running towards the ground bridge while Jack and Raph are screaming after her, is apparently, and she's all smiling too. And apparently that freeze frame, if you look at it long enough, it just looks like she is kind of baked. Like, you know, she's like, oh man, finally.
I could see that, because wasn't her line like, ground bridge duty, got it.
Yeah.
Like, she was really chipper about this mundane task and didn't care about, you know, usually she's one of the first ones to want to go out in the field, right?
Yeah, so this time she's but, all like, yeah. No, you guys, like, go and have fun. Just leave me alone here for a little
party.
While.
I'll be here when you need me. I can get behind that for sure.
Because that was kind of the, that was one of the, I guess the word for it would be holes in the plot is, you know, it was kind of a contrivance that RC would not notice them running through there. So I kind of like the idea that, well, the reason why she didn't notice, because she was having some RC time.
Now, normal discussion would just say, you know, it's a ground bridge.
It's
there's
loud.
A lot of details, and there's a lot of calculations. She's
and it's
very
loud.
Focused on what she's doing.
A lot of noise.
No, everyone comes home from the mission. There's no Energon goodies left in the cupboard.
RC's just passed out on the couch playing video games. I'm sure that the show won't do that, so it's probably going to stay stuck to our discussions. But that was a little theory I wanted to share.
I don't know. Let's see. Last week we got this old school death ray plot. They're not afraid of showing character death. Maybe we have one of the old '90s say no to drug episodes.
Only there's no real say no to this. It's just kind of like, hey,
on
man,
a very special episode of Transformers Prime.
Don't work heavy machinery when you're getting baked, or kids will end up in alternate dimensions. You're kind of like, alternate dimensions, sweet! Let's go get baked! Over the ground bridge. Gog, did you have another point from the episode you'd like to bring up?
Yeah, since when did Decepticons have ground bridge technology?
I'm wondering about that too, and it looked kind of like Ratchet was surprised.
Yeah, that was my first impression, because, okay, Starscream had originally said, he's like, you know, this is Starscream requesting ground bridge extraction or whatever, and I'm like, and then nothing happened, and I'm like, oh, well, maybe that was a writing error, because didn't they establish early on that the Ratchet had been the one to miniaturize the space bridge, and the Decepticons didn't have that technology, right?
I distinctly recall that was one of the things, and that's why the Decepticons were flying around in a warship. They couldn't just go wherever.
Okay, I just want to make sure that I didn't misremember that. So.
That's how I remember it. Maybe there was something said in an episode that I just glazed over, but...
Okay, but so when he said that and then nothing happened, you know, I thought, oh, well, the whole plot is going to be now Starscream is stuck out here and can't get away, and maybe it was just a writing error, or... maybe it was a guest. I didn't look at the writing credits or anything, so I was like, oh, well, maybe they had like the third-tier writer or something on this episode, and he wasn't informed that the Decepticons didn't have ground bridge or whatever. And then the ground bridge opens up, and I'm like, oh, okay. And my initial impression also was that Ratchet seemed to be a little surprised, but it almost seemed to be more of a sense of, he was more concerned about the fact that there were two ground bridges within each other, and he knew right off the bat that was bad news.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see if they follow up on that, or if it's just we assume that, oh, well, the Decepticons never really thought to use short-range space bridge like the Autobots, specifically Ratchet, did on his own. And just since then... since they witnessed the Autobots do it, they decided, oh, well, we're going to miniaturize this as well, and now they have, and that's it. So
yeah, and
if nothing happens, that's the only assumption we can work under. But it would be nice, because they established the Decepticons couldn't do it, mm-hmm. So it would be nice to get at least a little something to let us know what happened there, because coming out of the blue kind of was a little surprising.
Yeah, and I mean, like I said, if a line was said somewhere in the show, please let us know. I do not recall ever hearing a line about the Decepticons having a ground bridge off the top of my head. If that is the case, for speculation's sake, it is. If this is the first time we've seen a Decepticon ground bridge, this is also right after Megatron got back in his body. And I would, you know, if I'm going to draw the lines together, perhaps he saw that technology when he was inhabiting Bumblebee's body and was like, hey, maybe I should take that back to the base and install it on my warship. And, or at least, you know, the concept of it, if Megatron's, you know, a genius or something and he could suss it out himself. I could see that as a reason if it is ever stated.
Just basically giving everyone a project while he beat Starscream to an inch of his life.
Yeah, he's like, I'm going to be busy over in the rec room for a little while, so if you guys could build this idea I had, please do so.
But now, it was an emergency ground bridge.
Yeah.
Now, if you're talking about, well, miniature versus what? You know, for all we know, half of the Nemesis is dedicated to getting that ground bridge to work.
Yeah, it'd be funny if the reason, like you said, emergency ground bridge, if the entire time they had one, but they didn't know how it worked and it was behind glass, the break in case of emergency. Starscream's like, emergency ground bridge. Like, oh, okay, well, we can use this now. Yay.
And Erraticon Frank is like, I always wonder what this thing is for.
But, yeah, well, I mean, now we know what happens if two ground bridges are close to one another. It apparently sucks space and time in upon itself.
You get all Black Mesa.
Yeah, and you can come out of it by walking through one backwards. Like, yeah, the backside of it just looks like a pizza. Just step on through.
All right. Omegas, did you have another point you'd like to bring up?
Are we going to get, like, you were talking about, okay, we have this looming threat of Skyquake in the Shadow Zone, this alternate temporal phase, dimension, whatever. Mm-hmm. But we also have a living hand just roaming around the desert.
I just rewatched the episode before we started and got to that scene, and I noticed that the way it's blocked is Starscream says, I want an emergency ground bridge. Then there's a shot of the hand crawling back towards him, and it just jump cuts to after the battle in the Autobot base. I'm wondering if that hand is going to be a recurring thing. Like, if it's the only thing that Starscream actually managed to accomplish symbiosis with, does he now have a walking arm as a minion or something like that?
Right, right. It'd be interesting if they went that direction. I mean, the way Skyquake has been played for laughs is like, if anyone saw, and this is the only reference I have, the Teen Titan cartoon, where they had this, like, evil moth worm thing as a villain, but at the end it just turned into this little worm they kept as a pet, and the pet would appear just like in the background every so often as a gag. And I almost want to see that arm just like randomly crawling around the Decepticon base, just
totally,
you know, just screwing off.
Yeah, I would love it to become like that. That would, again, in Prime is a show where I would almost say that I would not be surprised, and I almost expect that this is the kind of thing that would happen, is that arm sticks around and is worked into the show, even beyond just being a gag in the background, like being part of the potential plot devices.
Oh, yeah. I could see it. I mean, there's a lot of things you could... It could be a throwaway thing. It would just presume it was blown up off camera. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there's a lot of little potential for either... Yeah, you know, either like a little secondary menace for the kids or just something to goof around with at the same time, because you have an evil, dead Decepticon, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
You have the hand that went bad.
Well, if Starscream actually accomplishes symbiosis with it, that would also mean he could have that hand crawling around in the vents and be using it to listen in on what's going on. Like, he could turn that into his own way of being like, all right, Soundwave has his drones. I've got mine. It's a hand, but...
But it's a hand like a disobedient puppy. It just keeps leaping up on his face.
Yeah.
So happy to see his master.
That was a fantastic moment when it leapt out of the portal, grabbed him by the face, and he's just like, this isn't mine.
Like, unhand me was the line.
Again, Steve Bloom, that was another one. That was, I think, the moment when I hit Twitter, because he just has so many winner deliveries, and especially those flabbergasted deliveries. He was just so good at it. I was really enjoying my time there.
Yeah. My only question with a hand was, I was trying to figure out what the Foley guy was up to, because before the commercial cut, it's these huge metal thumps as the fingers hit the ground. And then when it comes back, the fingers now sound like tin cans being dumped out for some reason.
Yeah, it started to sound a little bit more rickety while it was walking, which did rob it a little bit of its weight, but I thought the Foley worked in the idea of if it's a disembodied zombie hand, then I can buy rickety. Yeah, I don't know. That's...
I don't know. It's still a one-ton robot hand. I figured it'd make more noise than that.
Well, see, that was contextual clattering. The kids were probably hearing the thuds, but they were like, all right, in a Transformer world, Transformer hears those thuds as clinks.
Oh, that's because it was in the Shadow Zone.
Yes, exactly.
That's what clinks sound like in the Shadow Zone. maybe this is why the symbiosis just lasted so long, is because it was only enough for one hand.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm sure they're going to go into details on how that symbiosis stuff works a little bit more and you know, in regards to when Megatron does it versus Starscream and et cetera. This actually I thought was pretty cool in that it set up a lot of little plot ideas that made me feel like, all right, I still see that there's lots to happen in this world. I mean, granted, there's already lots to happen, but it's keeping Dark Energon involved as well. I guess just to split off that, and this kind of referencing a concern, Gog, that you had way, way back. Dark Energon is now back in the show, but it certainly seems they did not fall on using it as the sole driving plot device. And I'm kind of digging how they've just added it to the repertoire that the show has of antagonistic forces, because now we've got, there's the Dark Energon, there's Mech, there's just Megatron, there's just Starscream, there's a lot of variety of potential antagonists in the show now. And I think they've done a really good job of like just building up this armory of things they can choose from.
I think I meant to bring that up last week, just to mention, like, yeah, we're like 13, 14, however many episodes in now, and we've seen a shard of Energon since the initial mini. And that they can still use that. And now we've been without it so long, I think it's going to be cool when it finally does show back up with the whole, if Megatron ever does come into a position to utilize that again, because it would appear that all his, or at least a good amount of his Cybertronian zombies were destroyed in the space bridge explosion, I would assume, but
yeah,
the writers can do with that whatever they wish. But I mean, it's since the mini, which focused heavily on Dark Energon, zombies, more zombies, now with an entire planet of zombies, and since then, this is the first we've ever gotten, and it's Starscream trying to imitate that and failing. And we have, like, a single zombie kind of walking around for humorous purposes, and then Starscream saying, oh, that didn't work, and then seemingly giving up. So, yeah, I like the way that they're referencing that stuff and playing off what we've seen with it. But, yeah, I'm very pleasantly surprised, because we've gone this far in with a fair amount of very unique episodes covering a wide variety of storytelling devices, and they haven't fallen back on that a single time. So I have a feeling that when they do use it, hopefully they don't seem to be wanting to take the easy way out. So I do hope that they find a way to work that bin back in cleverly. It's definitely pulsating in Megatron's spark chamber now, which is, it's kind of strange, because I mean, it's almost maybe in this that the spark is more of just a heart, like an organ or an energy source, like a battery.
Yeah, rather than
a life force or a soul. It's more of just like their little miniature nuclear power plant that keeps them going, that's unique to a Cybertronian. And Megatron found an alternate source, which is Dark Energon, because he doesn't have a spark anymore, it appears. So at least in Prime, maybe Transformers just have brains and all their information is kept up in there, just like a human. But you rip their heart out, they're in bad shape because they're going to die. But so, I mean, that's the appearance so far. But yeah, I look forward to seeing where they go with the Dark Energon, especially because we know, spoiler, skip ahead 20 seconds if you don't want to hear something we've already mentioned, tick, tick, tick. But we've heard from previous clips of recordings that Unicron may be showing up at one point. So that's the Dark Energon is probably going to link into that. So again, this is just speculation, but I have a feeling that the Dark Energon is not gone. It's going to still play a big role, and I'm happy to see that its importance in this universe is not making it the focus of every episode.
Yeah, absolutely. It's
yeah,
it's being used smartly, I think. Omegas, I don't know. How do you feel? I think you were concerned a little bit as well about Dark Energon MacGuffin.
Yeah, because it's such an easy thing to use just to blame everything. Like, if I'm going to reference again, let me do if I were to go to something like Inuyasha the anime, where you have these little powerful gems, and it's the reason for everything going wrong every episode. Mm-hmm. Because when you give something that kind of unexplained power, it's so easy as a writer to go, I'll just make it do this. You know, it'll just do this now.
Yeah.
You know, just because I think this would be a neat idea and I need an easy excuse to do it.
Yeah, you kind of just keep building up its list of powers.
Yeah.
We were worried about that because in the five-parter, that happened a little bit in that Dark Energon kind of had like, oh, and it can do this and this too. But they've capped it looks like.
Yeah. I was really happy to find out that it's being limited in its usage and in its ability now.
Yeah.
And that apparently it doesn't even work for just anybody.
Exactly.
You know, it's a specific transformer or, you know, either, I don't know if it has to do with, okay, he needs, a certain spark, certain build, certain power, whatever. There is a lot of mystery to it, but at the same time, it is a limited MacGuffin.
Yeah, and there's not much of it. As far as I can tell, there's some of it buried out in that graveyard, but it seems there's not very much. Starscream has a shard, and there's one in Megatron, and that is it. So it's not like everyone can just go out and trip over some Dark Energon every week and go like, oh, I found some too.
I forget offhand. Do we find out where Megatron got the shard while he was Bumblebee?
Yeah, he remembered where it was, the shard that he threw into the ground to awaken all the zombies back in the premiere. Okay. And so again, it keeps it very limited. It's like it is that very same shard that he hurled into the ground.
So in that sense, Dark Energon doesn't evaporate once used either.
Yeah, and I think that's what Starscream proved in this episode too, is because I didn't even think of it, and it made sense to me right away when he was like, "You forgot about the one I pulled out of you," and I was like, "Oh right, there was another one." It seems like it does not evaporate. It seems like it is a perpetual energy source of some kind. But
yeah. And I would even say that maybe you could argue that it didn't have the same effect that Starscream was looking for. Because maybe Megatron had thrown it in the ground, but when Starscream threw it in the ground, it totally like made the ground go crazy, just like it did before. So I think it's safe to say that shard still has the power it did when Megatron first threw it.
Yeah, it's still got some fire. So they have done a good job, I think, of making it both limited and it's with each appearance, Dark Energon is making more fictional sense to me in how it works and in what its abilities and limitations are. I think it's supposed to still have some mystery to it, given its nature, but I certainly don't feel like it is being used, as you said, just to make up rules as you go for like, oh, we need this to happen in this episode, so Dark Energon.
Right.
Absolutely. I'm feeling very topical about this episode, so I'm bouncing in my chair right now. Gog Dog, keep me bouncing in my chair. Have you got another thing to bring up?
Oh, man. Man, let's go. Let Omegas go first. I'll think of something.
All right, Omegas, keep me bouncing in my chair.
Bouncing. We are starting to run low here. I did like one thing I felt was also missing. We talked about Miko getting her role back. Mm-hmm. Jack got to have his role of being the logical one.
Yes.
Of the group. You know, it got to the point where I was getting frustrated with Miko and the characters they had provided these guys. they subdued him. I was happier with them. So now when they bring those characters back to what they originally were, you know, in those earlier episodes, you know, it's kind of, it's almost a refreshing thing. Like, you know, these are the roles that these characters were set in. Now we're, you know, hey, now we're finally doing something with them again.
Yeah.
And Jack was very in command throughout that episode. I mean, he's, you know, he's the only one keeping a watch on Miko. You know, he's the one, you know, trying to lead them through the Shadow Zone, away from Skyquake. You could tell that he was the only one with a head on his shoulders through this one.
Yeah, he's maintaining his role really well of giving us that look of almost like the viewer's level of realism about what's going on. I can't remember what line it was. He did have a line somewhere in this episode that, again, I thought the voice actor delivered really well as well. He's generally been really good at having these lines of a little bit of, you know, exasperation as to, you know, the realistic view of what's going on. And I'm still enjoying his performance. I thought Miko had a great line as well when she did the sort of vaguely uninterested, line where she's like, yeah, go bulkhead, bring on the hurt. I was like, oh man, that was delivered really well. Just in terms of like, oh yeah, I'm totally not interested. Go team.
Yeah, but it's Miko, you know. Uh-oh.
Yeah.
that's like when Starscream smiles, you know, oh, something's going to happen.
And Miko is also totally drawing a picture of G1 Optimus Prime, I think.
Noticed that.
Yeah, I actually freeze-framed at one point to get a better look at it. Again, so much lovely stuff in the backgrounds of this show. It's little things here and there.
Yeah. Well, you talk about, you know, we've heard that the animators really like over animating Miko, and it just has me looking, you know, through her animations and what she's doing to see where those extra touches come in.
Mm-hmm.
I almost wonder if that's something, you know, I don't know if that's something written in, you know, a writer at the desk going, and she's drawing Generation 1 Optimus instead of Prime Optimus.
Yeah. For a second, I even thought it was Rodimus because I just saw the red, but it was not to be.
That would be very random.
I would have been super pumped, though, if she was drawing Rodimus. Like, all right, you got your head on your shoulders, Miko. You're my buddy now.
I would have thought I missed an episode or something.
Yeah. By the way, Rodimus Prime is in the show now.
Yeah. We're trolling Proto Man now.
I have something I can bring up, but Gog, did you have a point you'd like to bring up?
Yeah, on the TFW 2005 Prime Forums subsection. First, we had a thread discussing whether RC was hot or not. Then we had one talking about whether Miko was hot or not. And someone has now recently started a poll asking if Jack's mom is hot or not.
I'm so happy that someone is asking that question because it's an important question that needs to be asked.
You kids need to get out more.
Hey, man, they have a term for that. I believe it is called milk. Sorry, MILF. I will leave it at that.
Which does, you know, I really don't have anything else to bring up about this episode. I didn't have a chance to do my second watch through with notes. But, yeah. I mean, speaking of Jack's mom, still haven't seen anything from her. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd like to see some of that because,
yeah,
I like Jack, but
I want to see more of their families.
Where are the families in this?
Because last episode...
These kids are just gone. They're just out all day.
Well, one of the listeners last episode brought up something very interesting about Raph's house I hadn't seen, is that not only are all the curtains drawn and completely closed up, but his yard is just a barren wasteland.
Yeah. I saw that screen cap.
There's no grass. It's just a bunch of barren dirt. And I'm like, I want to know what the hell is going on in Raph's house.
I want to see more of the families. I'm not going to lie. Most human related stuff in Transformer shows, I just like, please. But it's, I'd at least like to see a little bit where we get a glimpse of what's going on. But it's just that they took the time in the pilot to establish that RC was like hanging out in Jack's garage on the weekends and stuff, or at night. Mm-hmm. And they haven't really touched on that at all, which is fine. they don't need to keep dragging out the fact that, oh, they're coming home with me every day, hilarity ensues, but at least once in a while we'll just catch a glimpse of, there's Bulkhead parked on the street out in front of Miko's house. There's probably a funny situation that could come out of that, and at least have one episode where something like that happens. So, but I'd like to see it. I'm not.
Yeah, and you know, it's actually kind of, it's a compliment to the human characters that, you know, they're delivered so not even like, you know, excellently, but they're delivered to such a degree of, you know, palatability that we're interested in seeing more of their lives outside of when they're hanging out with the robots. I think it's a compliment to the writing. In Raph's case, I admit it's more morbid curiosity, but with Jack especially, and given that Jack and RC are such a strongly written pair of characters, it would be great to see a focus episode that did bring his mom back into the scene a little bit.
Oh yeah. Like the way this episode was written, I can almost see one of those scenes where, you know, she's walking by the door to the garage. She hears a girl talking and she's going insane because there's no one there.
Yeah. She's like, where are you hiding? Where are you hiding your lady friend? I can see that. I wouldn't be irritated if that happened. I had something I wanted to bring up about the voice acting. For all my compliments about everyone, again, a lot of great voice acting. Jeffrey Combs, hell, I'll talk about this right afterwards. Remind me to. Peter Cullen did kind of hit trailer voice at one point in this episode. I will say, to a point where I felt like bringing it up, which was when he was going, when they got back to the base and he was asking like if there's a way they could figure out where the kids are. For some reason, that delivery kind of made me go feel like, oh man, he's getting back into trailer voice for a second. He got right out of it, but. It kind of stuck out to me. I was just curious if any of you guys or if any listeners felt that way on that line where he's like, can you triangulate the position of where the children may have come out of the space bridge ratchet? And I was like, oh, trailer time.
I hate to bring it up. I mean, there was a little bit of dialogue in this episode that I felt was a little bit wooden.
Mm.
Just over, like, when Megatron's expositing over Starscream, it just... You know, it felt very much like exposition of what happened last episode, or what had happened the last few previous episodes.
Yeah, that one, I wasn't so much feeling it was wooden so much as it felt like Frank Welker was delivering the start of a greater series of lines that he never actually did.
Yeah,
it felt like he was going to have more lines, and then he just kind of walked off, and I was like, oh, all right, see you later. That, I mean, that all said, I do want to point out also Jeffrey Combs again, superstar in this episode. That moment where he's, you know, they're going like, you know, can we figure out how to find the kids, and can you track where that cell phone signal came from? He's like, you want me to track a cell phone signal through a dimensional shift? You want to track cell phones in another dimension? He kind of stares. He's like, all right, let's do it. Like. Jeffrey Combs is such a champion in the show. I love nearly every moment he speaks. I don't know how to put that any creepier than I just did. Do any of you guys have another bit of the episode you'd like to bring up? Any other thoughts or notes or anecdotes from our message board?
I've only got two little notes left. It was the first time I noticed that Starscream wore high heels, and we had a rare sighting of Ratchet's vehicle mode.
That's true. I forgot. Yeah, Ratchet was not just a... And he even reacted. Like, Ratchet and everyone else. Ratchet's like, me? I kind of like that moment, too. I guess he's just so used to not being on missions.
Yeah, that's... And it seemed RC was more than happy to give up her spot.
Yeah, well...
Like, yeah, leave me behind for once.
She was going to go and she's going to get stoned. Yeah, I'm working the console.
How would they even phrase it? Because they don't have stones where they come from.
It's Energon goodies.
Yeah, Energon goodies.
Well, they have Energon goodies, but you know they don't have rocks. So how can you get stones? Don't know what a stone is.
I'm gonna have some Energon goodies.
It's the same way they have Cybonic Plague. It's the closest approximation.
I'm gonna have some Energon goodies because the buttons on the console, when I push them, I can feel the button. I should have written this episode. I really should have. I'm trying to think if I had anything else. Mostly just like I liked a lot of the line deliveries. That's where I'm tending to my head's tending to go right now. Some great voice acting and great voice direction. I'm trying to think of the next thing someone's going to go, I can't believe you guys didn't mention of. Racking my brain for this one. While I do so, who would you guys go out with, RC or Jack's mom? Silence.
RC. No need to pay for gas.
Well, yeah, RC because, you know, giant robot hanging out like a buddy would be pretty awesome. And RC seems like a pretty cool chick. You know. I mean,
yeah.
All right, I'm letting you guys hang there. I'm sorry.
It's going to be one of the more awkward questions we've ever been
who
asked.
Who would you go out with? I do want to say, this is my last one, and this is a little repetitive, but I want to also just give again, having watched it a second time, some massive props to the scene where Knockout is like, well, you know, in light of this horrible thing that's happened to you, this would be a marvelous time for an upgrade. And I honestly could have seen that scene going on even longer, and I probably would have enjoyed it. That could have been a miniature episode in and of itself.
Oh, yeah.
The adventures of Dr. Knockout and his upgrade salesmanship.
Starscream and Knockout are quickly becoming my favorite duo in the series.
I'm feeling kind of bad for a Breakdown. He's getting left out of some of Knockout's more memorable and awesome moments. I'm really hoping we can get Breakdown back into the show a little bit more. I mean, he had a great moment when he broke the Arctic in half, for sure. But he's starting to get a little bit left out. Although I am, as you said, that the chemistry that Knockout and Starscream have is. It's pretty fantastic.
Yeah, it's just Knockout is cool, but it's just like he came out of nowhere. It's like one day Knockout showed up, and now he is the star of the show.
Yeah,
like it's just so strange because like they have this initial lineup of well, three people, I guess, and then here comes Knockout, and now Knockout is in every episode and steals the show.
He's in more episodes than everyone else. Yeah, granted, his voice actor is a fantastic voice actor who is. Playing the character utterly to full tilt levels, but he is really a show stealer. He's a spotlight nabber. Whenever he shows up and he says anything, he is yanking attention away from anyone else in the room. I expounded how much I loved his character when he first appeared, and I'm still really enjoying him. I get pumped when I see Knockout because I'm like, I know I'm going to enjoy what he does in this episode, no matter what it is. I don't know. It is strange how he just sort of popped up, and then by proxy, it is strange how Breakdown has become so unmemorable, despite debuting in the same episode. But I mean, we have the rest of a season to cement.
I hope they do that because I like Alec. What's his name? Alec Baldwin. God, somebody Baldwin. What's his name?
Now I can't remember which one it is. It's Jane. That's all I remember him as.
Adam.
Adam Baldwin.
Yeah. Adam Baldwin's great, and he's being so underused. And I mean, Knockout's fine. He's great. We all love him. Like I said, he's stealing every scene that he's in. But
he's part of a duo, and he's becoming part of a different duo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Well put. He was part of a team. They established that him and Breakdown had been partners for a while, and there was a cool dynamic between the two. And now it's just he's kind of abandoned Breakdown. And that makes sense plot-wise perfectly because he was just part of this little two-man group that did their own thing. And as he's gotten closer to Starscream and Starscream has had more need of him, that also helped to serve him because that's been putting him into a position of power. So it would make sense of why he would spend less time with Breakdown and more with Starscream because it's furthering his rise to power. So hopefully now that seems to have been swept under the rug, at least for the time being, hopefully him and Breakdown can have some more adventures. I hope so.
It almost makes me wonder if it's the same situation with Dwayne, where they got someone to do a voice that might have too much of a price tag to have on very often.
I was wondering is, I was going to say, if he's not, if Adam Baldwin isn't on there for Adam Baldwin reasons, then that's cool. I dig it. Because, you know, I'd like to see him get work, but if he doesn't need to be in every episode and if he's expensive, it makes sense. I'm nodding now. Nodding a whole bunch.
Asterisk, nod, asterisk.
Yes. I don't know, Omegas. Do you know what else he's doing right now?
Yeah, I keep up with the Baldwins.
I'm just wondering, are you a Baldwin fanatic?
No.
Do you watch Chuck?
No. I have no idea what Baldwin is doing now. Any of the Baldwins.
I mean, if he is Dwayne Johnson tier as far as the cartoon goes, and that's why he's not in it much, that's fine. But I wish he was in the background more than, you know, walking around buffing things, just working with tools, something. And I certainly don't mean to say I dislike what Knockout is still doing great stuff. He's still fantastic to watch. I just want his buddy to be up there too. But we'll see. Maybe next episode, all of a sudden, it's going to be a Breakdown focus episode. I think I read a solicit that mentioned Breakdown's name specifically somewhere, so I'm pretty sure we got one coming, at least. That is in the future. Anything else you want to bring up about Shadow Zone?
Oh, just for the Adam Baldwin faithful, he is doing something called War of the Worlds Goliath right now.
Is that a movie or a TV series?
It does not say.
War of the Worlds TV series would be weird. Every episode ends with the birds coming in and killing all the aliens. Morgan Freeman is in every episode. Actually, no matter what it is, if they don't have Morgan Freeman back on it, I don't know if I want to watch it. If we are all tapped out, how about that preview for that spooky R.L. Stine cartoon? I didn't know R.L. Stine is still doing stuff. I watched the Dark Prime encode of this episode, and the trailer wasn't for Prime. It was for some R.L. Stine venture. And I was like, dude, and it wasn't Goosebumps. He's like moved on to something with a slightly more respectable name. Not to diss on Goosebumps, but you know, that's very 90s. Am I the only one who saw the R.L. Stine trailer? Apparently I am. All right. Well, we are now fully tapped out for this episode of Primetime. Thank you, Gog. Thank you, Omegas, for coming by. We've got another episode coming up, as far as I know. And we're going to keep at it. I think we might end up having a little bit of a skip when BotCon rolls around, only because we're going to be really busy at BotCon. But we can figure something out. So until next time, Prime out!
What the f*** it means, but you got some badass perpetrators that are here to stay.